is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Welcome, everybody, to Beersmith Podcast number 71. It's late December 2013, and happy holidays to everybody. Hope you're enjoying your holiday season. I'd like to remind you that Beersmith 2.2 is out. Got a great update for you for the desktop. It includes Linux, PC, and Mac. And you can grab that update at beersmith.com. You know, so try that out for 21 days for free by going to beersmith.com and downloading the update. And now, without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, my guests are Francis Booth and Leslie Deppert from Booth's Brewing and ESB Brewing in Tampa, Florida. Francis is the owner and founder of Booth's Brewing and Homebrew Supply in Tampa, Florida. He started brewing at age 17 and is now the founding partner of ESB Brewing, also in Tampa, where he holds the illustrious title of The Charge of Stuff. Leslie holds the title of head doer of things at Booth's Brewing. She's also brewmaster at ESB Brewing, and she says she's creator of a delicious adult barley soda, which is how she refers to beer. She has a passion for experimenting with unusual ingredients. It's great to have both of you on the show.
Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
Great to be here.
How are you guys doing today? How are things in Tampa?
Hot.
Yeah. It's hot in Tampa?
Yeah, it could be hotter.
No, it's going to be, it's like 82 today.
Well, that's good. We're going to be talking about wild yeast, and you got good conditions here for brewing with wild yeast, which is arguably the way we brewed originally a long, long time ago. So can you guys, let's start with Francis. Can you talk for a minute about the history of brewing with wild yeast?
Well, I wasn't there, but everything I've read back in the day, you know, they brew their beer, could do the whole brewing process, cool the wort down like a cool ship. Probably even before then, they'd probably make some kind of barley soup and it would just start fermenting. And, you know, no one had sanitizer back then, but like the Belgian style, they would put all the their wort into a cool ship, and then the night breeze would come into the room. They'd leave the top windows open, and little yeast will in the air would just blend right into that wort, and it will come alive. I guess that's where leaven comes alive. You know, the wort will start fermenting and crossing, will start rising out of that beer, out of that wort, and you know, beer becomes from that. So I guess the same thing we kind of did. We just did it on a smaller scale.
Open fermentation, huh?
Yeah, we actually took a couple little samples of some wort. We brewed a beer, and we took little Dixie cups, and we left them out overnight at four or five different locations, kind of near a little pond, a little woodsy area. And we went back the next day. I think one of them disappeared. Another one, someone looked like they drank. I don't know why. And then the other one had a honeybee that flew into it. And so we took that remaining liquid there and we just recultured it in like a small, we have a stir plate and an Erlenmeyer flask, and we just brewed a light, like 104 gravity kind of starter, and pitched that in there and kind of just recultured it several times. We noticed that a small pellicle forms on the top and that the flavor is real pleasant. And one thing we were shooting for was trying to find a yeast that we can ferment at 90 degrees and still produce a decent, you know, good flavor beer without the off flavors. You know, I guess the theory would be that the yeast evolved here in Florida. So give it a shot, right?
Excellent. Well, Leslie, how would somebody get started with brewing with wild yeast at home?
Well, it's very simple. Just like Francis was saying, you just get some DME, or if you have some wort left over that's unhopped, you know, if you want to pull it before you start doing your hop schedule, you can just go ahead and cool it down, put it into some small containers. If you're around a wooded area or an area that has fruit trees or an orchard of some type, then definitely put your traps all out and then come back the next day. And that's exactly what we did. It's very simple to do. If you're lucky enough to capture some kind of fermenting insect, or not fermenting insect, but fertilizing insect like a bee, then you're good to go with that. Just pour off a little bit without putting any of the dirt, detritus, debris, leaves or sticks or anything into your container, and just feed it a little bit more work and let it keep growing and keep propagating itself. And if it smells sweet, if it smells delicious, then you have something that you can possibly work with, and you can make a nice beer that you make all the time, that you know what the characteristics will be. Then you can pretty much determine if that's the kind of beer for you, if that's the kind of yeast that you want to keep propagating and keep that culture going inside your own brew house. If it stinks, then you got to pitch it.
Sounds like sound advice. Well, Francis, what are some of the advantages of working with wild yeast instead of traditional yeast?
Well, let's see. Well, I think it has a little bit more work, but to do, you have to keep the culture alive. I'm intending on sending off that culture to one of the labs to get cryogenically frozen here and kept on hand. But yeah, you got to keep the culture alive. So, well, you know, you can probably definitely do some research on how to store your yeast. Now, some benefits of local yeast. I think you're definitely going to be fermenting closer to your ambient temperatures. You know, the yeast, from what I understand from Chris White and Jamil Zanishev's book from about yeast, usually when they're being stressed, they produce a lot of the off flavors that you don't want. You know, those, what's that alcohol, the fusel alcohols and the other flavors that you get. So that produce off flavors in beer. So my thought is maybe if we use a wild yeast, you can ferment closer to your warm temperatures. And I kind of got that idea when I was down in Puerto Rico. They have a native drink they make using a little bit of honey and some sticks, like cinnamon sticks. And it tasted really good. It was just naturally fermented. And it really just had a natural flavor with a little bit of a sour bite to it. And so I was like, okay, after coming back, I'm going to try that. It can't be much different. Now, I don't know if it's easier. You have to maintain a yeast culture. I guess, you know, it's always easier just getting a slap pack from Y Yeast and pop it open, pour it right in. I guess the benefits would be you could probably ferment it at lower temperature. Maybe there's health benefits because also the yeast culture is local, and maybe it has something there too, but I'm not a doctor, can't claim that.
So how do you pick up, what do you do with the yeast? I mean, what do you do when you, once you captured it, how do you go about culturing it, Leslie?
Well, you would just go ahead and make a little bit stronger, wort solution, not too much food to shock the yeast so it doesn't have anything to eat, but just something enough to keep it going, so that it doesn't start to cannibalize itself. And then you just keep adding it and keep adding it until you, until you have a viable enough culture, then you can go ahead and start fermenting a proper batch of beer with it. You can also transfer it into a more dedicated fermenter that you can keep at a cooler temperature once it has fermented and has reached high croizen. That way you can always keep it at a more dormant temperature. So when you want to bring it out, all you have to do is shake it, scoop off what you need, and just replenish that same volume with a fresh new weak wort.
So how many times do you have to say step it up to get to a full size starter?
I think for this one, we probably stepped it up about 3 times. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it wasn't a lot.
Cause I mean, you're just starting with a cup full of yeast, really.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get to it. That was what size batch did you brew then?
Well, this particular one, the first one that we did was a 10-gallon batch. So I put in about a gallon's worth of starter into this one. It turned out super. We kept it in the warehouse for about 3 weeks. It fermented out really fast. The flocculation is near 100%. The attenuation is well in the 90s. And wow. that was at warehouse temperatures as well. So,
and you're fermenting pretty warm down there in Tampa, right?
Yeah, especially in the summertime.
What was the temperature in the warehouse? You think?
Oh, about 90, probably at a peak, maybe 95, maybe 96.
Yeah, I would say about 96. Yeah. Wow,
that's pretty high.
Yeah.
So Francis,
go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what about infection? Is that a problem? I mean, obviously you get a little bit of a sour taste. In fact, I'm drinking one of your Pilsners here that you made with your wild yeast.
So, the infection wise, I think there's some bacteria in there. That's why you get a little bit of sour flavor. And, if you ferment this in a glass carboy, you see a little bit of that waxy pellicle kind of forms on the top. It tastes good. I mean, I like that little bit of that sour flavor. It isn't like we're not getting, cabbage or any kind of, or that would be sulfur compounds. So we're not really getting a dirty diaper flavors and those kind of things, on that. Now I think the other beer you'll taste, the one, the champagne bottle that is the same, beer, the same yeast, just different beer, mm-hmm. is actually 8% alcohol. So we gave that yeast and the culture a lot more to eat. So there's a lot more flavor to it. So it has that little bit of back throat Belgian, like, you know, I don't know if you've had a pirate IPA.
Sure.
Belgian IPA has a little bit of that. I'd hate to say how my wife describes that flavor, but she's not a fan of that per se. But, a little bit more of the wild flavor that you get from a little bit of bacteria being in that culture. Now, infection wise, we still did all the same brewing processes. We sanitized everything. We were germophobes, except for the germs that we added.
Yeah, of course.
So and in terms of competition for food, kind of look at it that way, right? The yeast, if you can produce a big population of the yeast to eat all the food as possible there, it'll eat all the sugars. And then any residual sweetness probably get eaten because the bacteria culture grows a little bit slower, from my understanding. And then that, but the main bacteria you don't want in there is acetobacter. That will turn it into vinegar.
Right.
I didn't detect any vinegar flavor in there. I think
I'm tasting it right now, and I'm picking up, there's a little bit of lacto. I mean, it tastes the lactobacillus, which gives it that little bit of sour flavor, but it's a very, very mild Pilsner. So it's not unpleasant at all. It's pretty good, actually. Enjoying it.
We were shooting for was kind of evaluate that yeast at a couple different levels. So we were going for a really low alcohol, low hop, almost, I hate to say it, like, an American lager, watered down kind of point of view, something you could drink all day, So we shot for that first, just to see what kind of flavor the yeast is going to produce. So we're not hiding it with any hops or any malt characteristics. And then we also wanted to try the higher end of the scale. To give a lot of food to the yeast and see what kind of esters really get produced and see what it does at a more extreme level. So we fermented them all at the same temperature, and it was a pretty neat little experiment. I think it's a pleasant one to enjoy taste-wise. So.
Excellent. Leslie, is there anything you need to do different when you're brewing or fermenting with wild yeast?
Well, I would definitely ensure that if you think you may be having some type of infection, that you sequester your equipment, your fermenting equipment, anything that's plastic that could get an infection, like your airlock or your blow-off tubing, or if you're using plastic pails, then go with the plastic pails first before you start using this yeast in your entire brew house. Yeah. Unless this is going to be your only yeast, then there's no risk.
So you do have to segregate the equipment, kind of like if you were working with a sour beer.
Right, exactly.
Especially the plastics, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So like if you were going to make your own sour beer, if you were going to make a Flemish brown, then yeah, you would definitely need to sequester your equipment so it's not, you're not going to get an infection of lacto or PDO or Brett Brooks or Brett Lambic anywhere in your brew house.
Yeah.
But if this is your only yeast strain and you want to just make something that doesn't require you to go out and buy a refrigerator to maintain proper fermentation temperatures, then this is a great way to do it.
Have you tried fermenting at a lower temperature, I should say?
Yeah,
you fermented most of it high, right?
We did. Yeah, we did a lot of it in the 90s, but we did try going down into the high 80s, and it will ferment, but it's very sluggish. So we did a control batch where we brewed this honeybee pilsen, and we split it into two different batches. We kept one batch in the warehouse and we kept one batch in our office. And the office is kept at 68 degrees, so sluggish. There was virtually no activity in the airlock, virtually no activity from smell through the airlock. But as soon as we pulled it out of the office and put it into the breezeway, when it got into the 80s, that's when we started to see a lot of activity happening. We started to notice a lot of smells, a lot of noise was going on. And when we pulled it out into the warehouse, big change. Boom, 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 boom. Just lots of virulent, turbid, heat generating fermentation. It was really fun.
Awesome. Francis, what do you think about fermenting just, you know, open fermentation outside or inside even?
I really haven't tried it yet. I've been looking into it. Even the British ales, some of the big old breweries, they would do open fermentation and actually even just 2 days in an open fermentation vessel, they would open that vessel up and drain it into another vessel and aerate that wort again as it goes into that second vessel.
Wow.
I really haven't played with it too much. I guess, you know, we're definitely going to be trying some fun stuff. I just don't want to see moths or things.
Don't go to Belgium.
See things growing on top.
Sure, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of the Belgian beers are open fermented, aren't they? Right?
Yes. Yep. Yes. Yeah. It would be interesting. Yeah, it would be really interesting to do a cool ship down here. We would definitely need to do it in a segregated area. We would definitely need to build our own dedicated quote unquote cool ship walk-in. Just to make sure that anything that does start to ferment in their wild doesn't, for some unimaginable act of God, you know, infect everything else that's being fermented in the walk-in cooler there. If we're doing non-wild yeast fermentation,
that would be bad.
Yeah, it would.
especially if you're making commercial beer. I can you make commercial beer with wild yeast? I don't even know. I guess I don't see a reason why not. But
I don't see a reason why not. Yeast is yeast as long as it doesn't kill you. I really don't know the legalities of commercially doing wild yeast fermentation in Florida. I know it's in Texas that they can't import anything that was wild fermentation. You can do open fermentation all you want in Texas. Jester King just started doing their cool ship earlier this year, so it's going to be really interesting to see what they're going to have in the spring. I'm going to be so excited for them to see what they get, but I don't know the legalities for the state of Florida.
Well, I'm surrounded by woods here, so I'm kind of interested in trying this out myself.
Oh, you should.
I haven't done a lot of it, but I think it'd be interesting up here in Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's see. Leslie, can you tell us about a few of the beers that you experimented with? I know you sent me three of them, but can you talk about the different beers that you developed from this wild yeast technique?
Yeah, sure. We did the honeybee yeast, which was the blank slate, which is what you're drinking right now. And then we did another one that Francis was speaking of, where we gave the yeast a lot of food and we just fermented it at the same warehouse temperature. So we gave it some we gave it some guava paste and some palm sugar. And we did basically like a strong Belgian golden ale. So if you think of a Duvel style, mm-hmm. So we did that kind of grain bill and we just really ramped up all of the sugar content just to see what this yeast could manufacture. And that turned out really pleasant. Like we both really enjoy it. I've also made a Dunkelweiss. I did a traditional Bavarian style where I pulled a spezza off before I went into fermentation and fermented that in the warehouse with the wild yeast. That actually turned out really, really pleasant. And when I reintroduced the spezza back into the keg to do keg conditioning, that turned out to be a really soft, very effervescent, very floral with a little bit of fruit. So not too much banana, but some stone fruit, so maybe some plum, some apple, a little bit of banana, but not too much. And that turned out to be really quite a pleasant dunkel. It was very sweet, had a lot of nice mouthfeel, but you still had a little bit of suspension from the introduction of the Weinsteffen yeast culture that I mixed in during the spezza.
So you've been playing with mixing different yeasts, huh?
Yes.
Are you working off just the one strain of wild yeast that you collected, or have you got more now?
No, we're still working off of the first one. It's such a little workhorse for us. I mean, we'll keep it alive, keep it chugging. It makes us happy.
That's the one the bee filled in, huh?
Yes.
How about Francis? What about what are some of the other experiments that you guys want to try next?
Oh, geez. Well, we set up our mash tun. We have a couple different ways of doing. Like we could do just single infusion. We could do step mashing. We have a recirculating mash system that we've set up. Being computer guy and stuff, I have a little PID controller built. All that. So that's a little, you know, obviously technical play with hardware. So that's something else we do and use. What's some of the other stuff we've been talking about? I know I have all kinds of.
Well, we are going to be introducing our barrel aging program. We have a couple of different recipes that we are going to be ramping up to imperial status, so we can throw them in these Maker's Mark barrels that we acquired. One of them is Francis's chocolate cherry stout recipe. We're going to do an imperial version of that, and we're just going to throw it in the cask and let it go for at least 9 months. We're going to get a little bit of oxidization on there. I want to taste some of that raisins. I want to taste some fig. I want to taste some licorice even. And then we have another recipe that Francis has developed. It's his double IPA. He calls it Turmoil. It's really resiny, and it's a very big IPA. And what we did about a year and a half ago is Francis took this double IPA and he infected it with a Roselair yeast strain. And then we just left alone for about a year and a half or so, then took it out, threw some hops in it, bottled it after that. And it is a really sour, really hoppy IPA. I mean, I don't even know what to call it. It's just delicious is what it is.
It's special.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something that we're definitely going to be putting into one of the Maker's Mark casks, just to get that little bit of, you know, why not get some sweet bourbon flavor on there with a little bit of sour and some nice centennial or other some other kind of sea hop in there, and just to see what we're going to do. I mean, this was amazing. I don't see why we wouldn't do a full on barrel version of this.
So can you contrast working with wild yeast to working with more traditional yeast, and then also you know, some of the techniques people use to traditionally bring in sour beer, like throwing lacto or throwing in sour mash at the end?
Oh yeah, sure. You like to play with sour stuff though, right?
I've usually do more of the traditional yeast. And then I've always treated this wild strain as a traditional, just like, you know, primary fermentation, go to secondary, you know, let it do its thing. And I think the lacto in the yeast blend does its job. Just as the beer ages, I think I have one we brewed in June, and that does taste a little bit different than a newer brewed that light beer you're drinking. We've been brewing it a couple times, so it does taste a little bit more sour, but not so much. You don't get too much activity when you keep it in the fridge at like 45 degrees or 35 degrees. So, Leslie, I'm going to let you talk about how to, you know, pitch other cultures late and like secondary, or how you people like to do that.
Yeah, sure. That bottle of pumpkin pie goza that I sent up there for you, that actually, I did that in a very traditional fermentation style. I made a lacto culture a couple of days prior. I sequestered that. I added pumpkin into the mash. I added pumpkin into the boil. I let it go for a couple of days. And then when it was all finished, I introduced the lacto culture right at the bottom of high croissant. So I was able to get something that was really dry, a little bit of sweetness. You can definitely taste the salt, and you can definitely taste the smoothness of the pumpkin in that. And that was done in a very traditional style. I didn't develop some kind of weird new fermentation rules or anything like that. In regards to the wild yeast, I just treat that as a normal yeast.
So, I mean, what do you think about maybe throwing wild yeast in during the secondary, like you would lacto or something?
Oh yeah.
I think it depends on how strong it is, but
yeah, absolutely. It depends on, the amount, the strength of the yeast culture that you're going to be adding in secondary. And it depends on, if you really are going to do something where you need to have a low IBU. Lacto don't really care for anything above 10 IBUs. Mm-hmm. So if it's too acidic, then they're not going to have a good time.
Well, yeah. that's some good advice, though.
Well, it's the truth too. Yeah.
Leslie, you mentioned the pumpkin, and it's jogged my memory because we're doing so much stuff. We have some other interesting things we've done. We've actually made a pumpkin ale, but we smoked the pumpkin. We put the pumpkins in the smoker.
You smoked the pumpkin.
We did.
Really good. I used just a nice, I forget what.
An American brown porter.
Yeah. Brown porter, and we just smoked the pumpkin and mashed in with the pumpkins. Tastes great.
They came out well, huh?
Yeah.
It's really quite seductive. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I was interviewing Malster a couple months back, and they had smoked oats, which I thought was just awesome. You know,
ooh, smoked oats.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I missed that podcast.
It was great.
It's super easy to smoke your own malt. Just take one of those big, what's called muslin sacks. They use a disposable one. Sure. Just load it full of grain and put it in the smoker. Yeah. You could do it while you're smoking like a piece of fish or chicken, even. Just put the chicken underneath the malt.
No drips.
Christmas.
Yeah, no drips.
Well, I wanted to give you guys a few moments at the end here to talk about what you're doing, actually. So, Francis, I thought maybe we'd start with you and have you talk for a couple minutes about what you're doing with Boost Brewing.
Sure. We're down in Tampa. About 4 years ago, we started Boost Brewing. We're very focused on beer. We have a lot of winemaking supplies as well. We have 50 different varieties of malt and over 50 different varieties of yeast. Another thing we do that's a little bit different than other homebrew clubs, other homebrew shops, is we have really easy kits to follow. It's basically brew by number. So if you're getting into brewing and you're looking for a kit that's easy to do and you just want to follow, you'll nail a recipe. We also took complicated recipes and made them easier too. Still brew by number. We've kind of expanded into doing some growler filling, and we have an excellent selection of craft beer here as well for all the beer enthusiasts. So it's been very exciting. You know, we started 4 years ago, and we have a big following of home brewers down here in Tampa.
And you have a pretty nice website, if I recall, too. You want to share what your website is?
Yeah, sure. So we put the website up. It's got everything that we sell on there.
I got it up in the corner there.
Thank you.
For those of you watching the video.
Yeah, boothsbrewing.com. You can check us out. You can buy all the ingredients. We have our recipe kits up there too. We have all, you know, everything from star sand to all your grain and yeast and everything. We ship. We get our orders. We usually ship about a day after we get the orders just to validate everything. And so we're quick at getting orders out. And also pride ourselves on our customer service. All our staff brews. And we have some people that are a little more focused on mead making, some people into wine. So we got a good blend also. So if you call us up, I have our phone numbers up there, but it's
813-685.
Look over at Leslie.
813-685. What was the rest of it?
685-1909.
Yeah. I can pull it up. Hang on. There we go.
Jingle.
You can almost read it there.
But this is how it's going to come out. We have our phone numbers on the top, and we're open on 7 days a week. Our hours up there, and right next door. Also, we've just recently started our brewery, and you know, we're probably not sounding super coherent because we've been up late working hard at getting that brewery open. We have a soft opening tomorrow, so it's we're going to see how that wild yeast does in one of our beers that we're going to try out on some people. We got plenty of the honeybee there, and then we have a whole bunch of bottles of that Belgian strong. And so that's just some of the strains.
Looking forward to that. I haven't cracked that one open because it's a big bottle.
Yeah, that one's
still early in the morning here.
Early in the day.
So. We're recording this in the morning, but... well, Leslie, I want to turn to you next because you're the head brewmaster there at the brewery on premises. And I was wondering if you could just talk for a minute about what's going on with the brewery side of things.
Yeah, sure. Well, we've fabricated pretty much all of the mash tun equipment, our brewing rig, our fermenting vessels, our walk-in equipment, everything.
How big a brewery do you have?
Well, let's see. I think we've got a...
210 gallon boil easily.
Oh yeah, on that brew rig, yeah.
Yes, safely a 7-barrel on
seven that. Barrels.
Yeah, we're not really doing a full boil right now. We are definitely doing just little small batches. It's a little easier to manage right now doing small batches and trying to figure out what kind of beers that we want to do on a larger scale. It doesn't make sense for us to do like a barrel brew or a three barrel brew, and then have all this beer sitting around that maybe our customers won't like. So if we do a couple of
doing pilot batches, huh?
Right. Yeah. So if we do like a bunch of half barrel batches or whatnot, that's, I don't have any problem like multiple brews of half barrel size batches. So we're doing a lot of, we're definitely doing an IPA schedule. We're definitely doing a bunch of stouts. We have a couple of browns. Like Francis said, we have that smoked pumpkin that we made. We also have a pecan pie beer that we made. It's like a nut brown ale. I put a lot of pecans into the mash. Yeah,
I think you sent me one of those too.
It's really delicious.
Oh no, it's pumpkin pie.
Oh yeah, the pumpkin pie. And we also have some wheats that we're in the middle of doing. I made a pilot batch of a wheat beer, and I used a lot of agave syrup in it. It's so it has a little bit of smokiness and like molasses, but it has a sweetness like maple syrup. I figured that would be really nice in January. And we're just right now just still fleshing out like all of the different types of beers that we want to do.
We have the bourbon barrel.
Oh yeah, my imperial porter, the bourbon barrel imperial porter. Oh, it's beautiful. It's a really big porter. It's nice and dark brown, and has a lot of astringency going on. But I also put smoked salt in the boil. So at the end, I threw in a bunch of
salt.
Smoked salt, yeah.
Can you taste the salt in the final beer?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's not salty like a Goza.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
I don't like too much. So I went to Brew Pub the other day. I had some porter and it had salt in it. It just
totally turned me off. Yeah, this is not like it's not like you're eating a potato chip kind of salty. This is like, you know, when you're making a chocolate chip cookies, you put a little bit of salt in to accent the sugar. That's pretty much the ratio I was going for with this one. And then we just put it in a small bourbon cask, and we just let it age out for a couple of months. I mean, I'm not looking to get any oxidization off of this. I really just want the flavor of the oak and the flavor of the bourbon to accent the astringency of the porter and kind of round out the overall sweetness with the smoked salt. I like that nice smoked wood flavor in there.
Sure.
But you really don't get a lot from barrel aging. And especially if you're using like a alderwood smoked salt or a hickory smoked salt, you're definitely going to get different flavors from it. So that's pretty much what I'm going for with that one.
So where are you with the brewery? I think you mentioned you guys are getting ready to open sort of a trial run here or something like that with a tasting room.
Yeah, so we've had our federal brewer's notice for over a year. It takes about almost 120 days now with all the breweries applying to get a brewer's notice with the TTB.
Right.
So that's been done for a while. And what we've been doing right now is just, we wrapped up the final states with the state of Florida for getting our CMB brewer's license. I had to jump through a lot of hoops for restructuring companies. And there's a lot of rules with how you can't own interest in a business that sells beer and also own interest in a company that makes beer. So we had to restructure companies, do all kinds of stuff. It's been a very, it's been,
welcome
it's
to
been
the
exciting.
Business world.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of red tape. I can't wait to get into the label process. That's going to be the next
thing. Yeah, you got to get them approved, right?
but it's been very exciting. So we are going to get our temporary brewer's license from the state of Florida, probably today or tomorrow. I just got to send them the surety bond information. If for anyone who's listening, you know, it takes, be prepared to spend a lot of money.
And a lot of time.
And be patient in starting a brewery. And even after that, but one thing we're doing is definitely doing a tasting room, because the tasting room will get people in, and also we can control the beer before it goes to a distributor, and you know, it sits on a distributor's warehouse and goes out. So you know, that first impression is really important with the beer. So we will be focused on quality.
So are you doing a trial run this week, or what's going on?
This weekend's here. We have a bunch of people coming in.
Lots of private parties.
Oh, private parties. Okay.
Kind of just starting there. And
then what's the plan for opening up?
Opening up. So we're going to do the private parties for about probably a week, maybe two. And then we are going to start notifying our customers from our mailing list and everything from Boost Brewing, kind of cross promote. And just slowly but surely, I mean, we don't want to run out of beer. So we don't necessarily want to like hit a giant ad on the radio and just drive a whole bunch of people.
So everybody head down to it's ESB Brewing Company.
That's right. Yeah, everyone come
on. We have plenty of parking for buses.
Where are you located?
That's the brewery is actually
right people that are near Tampa. Yeah.
Yeah, we are Falkenberg Road. For people knowing the I-4 and I-75 intersection area, that's we're in that arena in that area. And it's Falkenberg Road, right north of 60. And it's 333 Falkenberg Road. Yeah, unit D407.
Okay.
Remember that.
And maybe also maybe around Christmas time or so, you'll be open up for public or?
I think so. I think that that's probably reasonable.
Maybe yes. For the New Year's Eve party or something like that.
New Year's Eve.
I would definitely say like beginning of January, we should be expected to be on an open basis. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, we'll look forward to that. And you feel growlers up there too, right?
Yeah. Well, first in the tasting room, because of the limited supply of beer we have, we are probably going
to
do
pumps. You guys need to get brewing.
We are working on it right now.
Time to brew.
Time to brew.
I can only push Leslie so hard.
Yeah, she's the chief brewer, I guess. Huh?
We'll be doing growlers once we get the volume up, for sure. So.
Well, Francis, do you have any closing thoughts you want to add?
I guess, keep your brewing creative, keep it fun. I think I would give people, I like to give people some guidance to, this is a hobby. It should be fun. It should be you brewing the beer that you like and for your friends. I find too often a lot of brewers will like hand someone they think is an expert and say, hey, do you think this is good? Really, it's about what you like. Always look forward trying to improve your beer. Just look inward and also do a lot of research. I find a lot of people claim to be experts or they look to people they think are experts. Take in a bunch of different sources, evaluate where you're getting your information. I just want to put that out to homebrewers because I've seen a lot of people either just hand me a beer and say, is this good? And I'm just kind of like, I'm not really even a beer judge. I have what I like, So I just want to leave that for homebrewers. Definitely keep it fun, brew fun stuff. Don't be afraid to do different things. It's like cooking and it just keep it interesting. That's kind of why I want to leave that.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Leslie, how about you? You got any closing thoughts for us?
Don't be afraid to experiment. It's just beer at the end of the day. You can always make another batch. You can always experiment with a different type of yeast. You can make one grain bill for the next week, for every week for the next year. And if you just use different yeast, you're going to get a different beer every single time. Don't be afraid to add things. Don't be afraid to withdraw things. Don't be afraid to play around with temperatures. Don't be afraid to play around with a hop schedule. Just have no fear. It's just beer.
Have no fear. It's just beer. That's great. Great sound advice. We really appreciate you guys coming on the show. Thanks for doing this. And thanks for sending me a couple of beers too. I really appreciate that.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, Brad. Thank you.
It's been great having you.
Talk to you soon again.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking time out of your busy day. Again, I had today my guests were Francis Booth. He's the owner of Booth's Brewing. And, of course, Leslie Deppert, who is the head brewmaster at Booth's Brewing and also ESB Brewing. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you very much.
Well, a big thank you to Leslie and Francis for appearing on the show. Really appreciate them being here from Booth's Brewing in Tampa, Florida. Reminder to you, if you haven't signed up for our newsletter, you can go to beersmith.com on the right side. Just put in your name and your email address and sign up for the newsletter. We'll send you an article on homebrewing every single week. And I want to remind you about some of the other resources we have. Obviously, at beersmith.com/blog, we have every episode of this podcast, all 71 episodes now, that you can enjoy, including video. And I also have over 200 homebrewing articles there. And I'd like to remind you also about beersmithrecipes.com, our recipe sharing site, where there's now over 10,000 recipes shared online, and many of those are rated, so you can find some of your favorite brewing recipes and enjoy those with Beersmith. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.